Like a row of tickets to the MLS Cup already on StubHub during the presale, it's That's So MLS. A North America soccer podcast with myself, Andrew Bates, and Nick Thornton.
Hello.
Nick, how are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
I am all right. I have had a dickens of a time trying to buy tickets to this danged final.
Not working out so much?
Mm-mm. I will be returning from my newly Maritimes abode to Toronto, both to see people, and I was hoping to watch a little soccer as well, but we'll see how that goes. Like last year, super high demand for the game at BMO Field.
Yeah. Well, it's good that Toronto fans are at least showing up for one game. I had to.
For one team, for a particular team.
Yeah. Who are they playing?
It's been a lot of things, I think, that we predicted would happen. Or that were easy to sort of see reaching their closure happened.
Do we remember what our actual predictions were, like down to the scoreline and everything?
Oh, not me. I don't remember.
I don't remember either. We don't need to go back and revisit. I was just curious.
I think there was a slight more. I expected more goals at the BMO Field's home leg. Toronto beat Columbus 1-0. And Seattle beat Houston 3-0 to create again a rematch of the MLS Cup final. It is happening again.
Which I think we both did predict that. We had a couple of scenarios in which Columbus could maybe take something to penalties. I don't think we gave Houston a shout, which is hardly scintillating broadcast news or predictions. I think just about everybody was onside. Although I do believe, I said, I don't think Toronto is going to blow out Columbus quite the way that people think they will, which turned out to be true.
Yeah, that was an interesting game because I feel like some of the decisions will be remembered for Jozy Altidore's kind of gutting it out through injury, which is kind of weird. It's like the thing you could do to endear yourself to Canadian sports fans the most, but, you know, people should get their injuries treated.
Yeah, well, it's funny because I took the opportunity to take back to our Twitter account, and of course, the commentator's curse, as soon as Jozy went down with that strain and then got back up and then immediately went back down again, I sort of course, cavalierly, I'm like, he's got to come off because it's too much of a liability to risk him in the final. And it looked fairly serious. I mean, he's not going to go down that easy in that part of the game unless it's a pretty painful injury and he was clutching his ankle. And I'm just thinking, yeah, there's no way. And then, of course, maybe a minute after I tweeted that, he's back on the pitch and then scores that go-ahead goal, which turns out to be the only goal of the match.
Well, I think that I definitely also thought, you know, there was pre-sale access. God damn it! Sorry, this is a clean podcast.
Is it? When? Since when?
It's labeled that on iTunes.
Is it? Oh, no. We've said a lot of swear words on this podcast.
Regardless of the clean or not cleanness, I thought that in the away leg, TFC had a very cautious approach. I felt that they continued this approach through the first half and into the second half of the game with the home leg against Columbus. And I kind of thought when Jozy went down that, like, you've wasted it. You know, like, I also, like you, I thought he was going out. Mm-hmm. And at that time, all I could think of, because it turns out that he is the impact player, all I could think of was, wow, you could have done so much more with him in the preceding amounts of the game. There was, I felt like the ambition was not there in the first half.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess a singular amount of ambition was shown by Josie. And that goal was also, I think that, like, that goal, and we'll talk a little bit more about some of the Seattle goals, but it shows how dangerous Toronto can be when they spend most of 120 minutes looking snake bit, mm-hmm. or looking unsure, and then all of a sudden you have this smooth touch sequence with Victor Vasquez, I think, where Josie dishes it off, and then there's like just a bunch of he barely even hits it with much power off the edge of his foot. And none of the passes that were rolling through the penalty area had that much force on them either. It was just very precise, a very smooth goal,
mm-hmm.
that ended up being the winner.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm just sort of going forward here a bit, but to the highlights, because I just, for the life of me, cannot remember this goal. Ah, yes.
You're very interested in the exploits of Toronto FC, if I recall.
No, it's one of those. Well, because it was about 6 months ago that this game was played, so
that's true. I did have to look up the highlights for Seattle,
okay.
Because it felt like it was in September.
I remember this in the tight angle, and it's a beautiful little flick from Giovinco to Vasquez, and then Vasquez onto Altidore.
Right. Yes.
But one of the, let's stay with the through line here, and not get too distracted about other things. But I was a bit curious about what you thought about Josie Altidore's singular motivation there, and his ability to carry on is. I don't follow Toronto FC that closely, so I don't. You or somebody else would have to tell me. But would that not be extremely frustrating as a Toronto fan to all of a sudden see Altidore wake up, and you think, if this is what he's capable of, where has this been for most of the last couple of years? Not that he hasn't scored goals, not that he hasn't scored some great goals, but that. And this is maybe something that's plagued him in his entire career, and why he hasn't achieved more, and why he certainly in recent memory hasn't achieved more of the men's national team, is that he seems to be very picky about when he decides to show up and play. We all know what he's capable of. I don't think anybody can be surprised that somebody of his physicality is going to get up and play on and go ahead and score a goal. But not that any Toronto fan will care, right? It's the goal that got them back into the final. That being said, it would be really great to see that week in, week out from Altidore. Granted, he's had his own injury problems through the past, but the focus just has never quite seemed to have been there for him, which is interesting when you see those flashes of the brilliance combined with the focus. But am I just not seeing enough of him play, or reading too much into it?
I don't think he's had a disappointing year. I think the fact that the TFC has done so well as they have, and we'll talk about the MVP voting later, but the TFC have had, we've talked about this, more of a leadership by committee model than just, you know, we rely on one player to be a superstar.
Yeah.
So I think that his year has not been that disappointing. However, I would say for Toronto FC, from what I've seen, he seems to excel most in the roles when he's being looked on to be the point man and to be the key star.
Yeah.
Like not that he's not trying at other times when he's fitting more into the dynamic, but it's when In this is where the language about effort comes into it, that when Giovinco goes down or some other circumstance comes about where there's a certain amount of pressure on him, or he puts pressure on himself, or for whatever reason he's in the hot seat,
mm-hmm.
He delivers. I do think he delivers most, however, in those roles. And that's when you see the best out of him.
That's fair, and I guess in a way it's kind of a fair matchup that they'll be playing Seattle again, because I feel like Dempsey is kind of a similar player, is that it's almost they're better under pressure, but without that seem to really kind of falter and not have much of a clue. I'd be interested to get your thoughts too on how you thought Giovinco played, because outside of that play, I thought over the two games, and I know he is just back from injury as well, and it's easy to criticize a player that does so fantastically well most of the time when they have off nights, but do you not find it perhaps a little concerning his form going into the final?
Not to play gotcha, but you said over the two games, and I think it's telling that he was almost as present in the game that he did play as he was in the game that he did not play. I mean, obviously he is a part of that goal, so you very can't true. Discount that. But it's like, there wasn't a lot out of him. And part of that, I think, was the way the manager played. I think that if I recall, they were playing this. They were heavily managed in that game. And
yes.
What I mean by that is that there was a shift, and I think it was when Josie came out, away from the 4-4-2 diamond, which provides the Victor Vasquez as the central attacking midfielder behind two strikers.
Yeah.
This was when Josie. Right. Okay. So, at halftime, they switched to the 4-4-2 diamond, which is when they scored.
Right.
And then after Josie came out, they switched back to a 4-4-1. They switched to a 4-4-1 with Vasquez as the second striker.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it wasn't... I was sitting there the whole time thinking, this was a mistake. If Columbus gets the goal, you're going to be screwed. It wasn't, so I guess, you know, joke's on me. Greg Vanney's the coach of the year, but...
Yeah.
But,
you mean you're not? I voted for you in everything.
Well, I appreciate
it. It's like MLS
that.
Just doesn't listen, you know?
Yeah. But it was a cautious approach. And I feel like the mentality that was taken to the game, you're not going to see it. I think you're not going to see as much flowing to Giovinco. I think there is a broader discussion when it comes to Giovinco's form about the team's form. Do you think that they have been different in the playoffs? Do you think that it has been just since the international break? Do you think that they still exhibit the fantastic form that got them to the regular season finish they accomplished?
No, I don't think they have. And I also think it's purposeful. I think one of the reasons why Greg Vanney has won Coach of the Year, and one of the reasons why he is in the final again, is because he knew what he needed to do to manage his team to get them to the final. And that the free-flowing, fast-paced, dynamic attacking Toronto that we've talked about all season, or certainly in the later third of the season that got them there, was also the very thing that was at times their Achilles heel, is that they flood so many players forward and rely so heavily on that attack and on the explosive attacking power of certain players that they leave themselves vulnerable to giving up goals. And so, yes, we're seeing a Toronto that isn't having the same goal-scoring form, but they're certainly having the same game-winning form or the same defensive focus form that they've had all season when they've played that way. I also think it's really important to give credit to Greg Berhalter and his side, because I thought they did a fantastic job of not just closing Toronto down at home, but also it's not like they were without chances. There weren't a ton, but they did force some saves it was unfortunate that, you know, I think on another night we might have seen a little bit more out of Higuain or Justin Merrim.
Yeah,
even our old friend Kakuta Mane had a couple of looks that looked to threaten, and certainly he was causing problems down that wing. But as Columbus has struggled with at times this season to fully connect and get the goal, we saw that again in this game. Yeah, I don't think either team can be too disappointed. Obviously, for the Columbus fans and for the club, it sucks to go that far and not win. But, you know, I don't want to overlook their effort against Toronto and just, you know, because I think it would be... It gives a very different picture of the game and of the series if we're just talking about Toronto and we're just talking about their poor form, even though I know I brought it up in a way. It'll just be interesting to see. Now, I haven't seen any reports, but is there any news about Altidore and whether or not he's even going to be available for the final?
The one thing I wanted to say just before we got off the subject that you're talking there about Columbus is that it's very true. Things compared to Houston, as we'll talk about later, they really did defend... they really did get to a good position and put themselves in the best possible position to succeed.
Yeah.
Zach Steffen with a third penalty save.
Oh.
Against Victor Vasquez in the first half.
Yeah.
And then...
Which I will say was not a particularly well-taken penalty, but the kid is just...
he has
ice in his veins.
Just his the way that things have gone, real wonderful for him, and I think it's been a great season for him. I was also going to say that it's very unfortunate for Columbus, but if Ola Kamara late in the game, I want to say 85th minute. They had a great passing sequence in the ball. He's on it. It's not that it's a couple feet in front of him. The ball actually passes through his legs.
Yeah.
As he's running through.
Yeah. Well, and Ola Kamara is a fantastic striker, and he's almost a great striker. But it was moments like that where I was like, man, that just sort of sums up the last few years for him, is that he has some fantastic goals and he's so good when he's good, but there's just points where it just, you know, great strikers do not miss on that. They sink it, and to have it just bobble through his legs. And I've been there, but.
Yeah. So the update on December 2nd on Altidore was that he is continuing to make progress after sustaining an ankle injury, and that Vanny says he'll be good to go on the 9th.
Hmm. Do you think some of that is just talk to put some fear into the enemy's heart? Do you feel like he might actually just be a game time decision, and you just keep your enemy guessing, thinking, oh yeah, Altidore and Giovinco are both fit to go, or?
Yes. I mean, absolutely. He is the sort of gamesmanship that has happened, that is put out, is such that even if you know he's not coming, you can't give the other team that in terms of preparation.
Yeah, for sure.
Certainly not. However, I don't necessarily think it worries me in the conference semifinals when both Altidore and Giovinco were suspended, because I think that it's like one or the other needs to be that key player, as I was talking about earlier. Altidore can do when Giovinco is gone. With Giovinco there, I'm worried slightly less.
Yeah.
Although Altidore's Altador does offer a completely different dimension than Giovinco does, and it is a necessary dimension in this more greedy, more defensive-minded playoff style of play that Toronto have adopted.
Yeah. So we need to now shift gears and talk about what happened in the other conference. And not a surprising result, but I have a few things that I want to talk about.
Please.
And I actually kind of thought this was the more interesting game of the two for a very specific reason. And that is the often overlooked Will Bruin. And
yeah. Now,
everybody knew that Seattle was going to win this game, barring some major fiasco. They're already up 3-0 on 3-0 on aggregate, or 2-0.
I want to say 2-0.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. 2-0 on aggregate. But those are away goals, and they're coming home to CenturyLink Field. Like, what could possibly go wrong? And the game more or less played out that way. Two, perhaps, surprising things. One of the first thing I don't think is actually I don't think they're that surprising, but I think it did catch people off guard. Number one, Seattle did not just pour everybody forward and have a field day at what could be a very easy game for them to win when they know they basically have the series wrapped up. That they still played cautiously, they still defended well, and Houston still had their chances. And it wasn't just such an open and cut case as the result may show. And the second thing is that Will Bruin was sort of the star of the match. First from a Messi-like little flick through a crowd to put some... Oh, what's his name? First Seattle goal.
Victor Rodriguez?
Yes, thank you. To put Rodriguez through. And then with the third goal, which was... it was a great pass in, and then, oh, I believe from Roldan, but just a ton of skill to be running onto it, staying onside, and then just flicking it over. So a Messi-like pass and a Messi-like finish. And people seem kind of surprised at the fact that Will Bruin scored 11 goals this season and came up big in the conference final. Are you surprised at the form of Will Bruin as of late?
Well, I've kind of spent a little bit more time paying attention to Will Bruin because of how you've talked about him as sort of an overlooked player. You've opened my eyes a little bit.
You've seen the Bruin light.
Seen the Bruin light. It's kind of in my eyes, where it fits in the narrative is the Will Bruin subplot is a will he or won't he?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that in this particular game, when it's important to have a dominating performance, but it's not really the result itself. It's not necessarily how many goals are scored or not. It's not that important. As just the overall result, he did a lot to promote himself, kind of as that player that is super important and is dangerous in a key role.
Yeah, well, and I mean, he's getting a little bit on in years. I don't think anybody's expecting Will Bruin to score 15 or more goals in a season. However, I sort of like his sort of quiet work ethic. You know, he's a relatively quiet guy off the field, and he's certainly a presence on the field, but he just kind of gets on with his business. And if he's not having a great game, you don't see that much from him. And even when he is having a great game, it's sort of both times. I mean, both in the pass, it's great vision and great reflex to just do the little back heel. And then when he's going forward, he's not really being marked. And I think that there's some skill to that and some tactics behind that of the way that he plays and the way that he holds himself. that actually allows him some of his successes, because he's not a big flashy striker. He's a tall guy, but he's sort of striker height, striker build. He's nothing out of the ordinary. And I think teams just go to sleep against him sometimes, and that's where he can be so lethal, is that he also has a finishing quality that a lot of strikers in MLS who are faster, who are maybe a little quicker on the ball, don't have.
Mm-hmm. So. I think that it's interesting. I'm looking at the formation, and it shows that they were using a 4-5-1 with Bruin. In the regular season, I've noted games where I saw that same formation used, and kind of Bruin might have been less effective as the sort of sole striker up top.
Mm.
But that was also without, I think the game that I'm thinking of was also without Dempsey.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that perhaps both having the front loaded 4-5-1, which is really kind of like a 4-2-3-1, with Dempsey in the center, is helpful. It's strange to look at a team sheet of a 4-5-1 and see Nicolas Lodero in what appears to be a defensive midfielder role.
Yeah.
Not well, even one of the front four.
It's surprising, I guess, but when you consider what they were up against, which wasn't a particularly dominant or difficult Houston side, I think it makes sense. I think sometimes the best tactic is the simplest one, which is you put your best players behind the ball. You know, and Lodero, although maybe it's not his position, I think they knew that Houston didn't have their full attacking strength with them. And so put somebody who, you know, Lodero could play goalkeeper, he could play right back, like he's a good player, and good players can be moved around on the park. In a final, I don't think we can expect to be seeing him there, but on a conference semifinal, when you know you've kind of already got it in the bag, why not ensure that you have it in the bag? Which isn't to say that Houston didn't get chances either, but you're right, it's notable.
Anything else from that game? Red card was the VAR.
Yeah, I took a couple of looks at it. A lot of people seem to say no, and what's the point in a game that's already kind of an open and shut case? But considering the red cards that have been given out for similar things, I think it's fair. Perhaps it's a little harsh, and you want to say, okay, referees have to keep their heads in these games as much as the players do, but I think it's fair. I mean, it was a kind of clumsy tackle, and he got clattered into and run over, but you can't tell me you don't know what you're doing when you go after a player's head and you shove it into the pitch, and you've got a bunch of players standing around you. I mean, I think it's just a flare of tempers. I don't think there's anything majorly malicious in it, but letter of the law is it's a red card. So regardless of how we feel, rule states it's a red card.
That makes sense.
And I also feel like if it had been the you know, the other way around, it's,
yeah, you would, yeah, absolutely, people would definitely be calling for it. We now end up with the same final again.
Yeah, back to 2016, the repeat. Before we do any dissecting, I want to switch things up, and I just want to ask you, gut feeling, what is your prediction? Who wins? Who loses? What's the score? How is it done?
Well, we'll be able to talk about this. Yeah, it's interesting to do this at the start of the conversation before I talk myself into any...
That's why I want to do it at the beginning. And, I mean, of course, you can go back and amend your answer, but I'm just curious off the top of your head what you're thinking.
I have a lot to say about how Toronto got here.
Okay.
And sort of what last year meant and what the season meant, and trying to figure the postseason into that. it would be a perfect sports story for Toronto to win this game.
Mm-hmm.
And something is telling me that it is not going to happen.
Oh, interesting. That is not where I think you were going with that. That is not interesting.
Because, I mean, if you're the... This is the thing, is that the... It's like last year, personalities like Seth and Fry were sort of front and center, and they're still around.
Mm-hmm.
Last year was a story of two teams canceling each other out. The teams are very familiar with each other. Neither of them has changed a lot. Mm-hmm. Although I would say that that Toronto has changed slightly more with the addition of Vasquez.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think? What's your prediction before I get too far ahead of myself?
No, that's great. It's, you led me on there for a second. You changed it up at the last second. Mm-hmm. I agree. I will be the first person to take my hat off to Toronto. I think they deserve it. A part of me, of course, would be thrilled to see a Canadian side win the MLS Cup. Mm-hmm. I think Seattle is the better team. I think Seattle has a little bit more to offer, at least at this point in the season. We'll get into the possible factors that will affect it. I'm just going to say right now, I think it's going to be 2-1 or 1-0 for Seattle. I just think Seattle is too good. They've got a fully fit squad. And Houston is not an easy team to beat. They made it look easy. And I think that is possibly going to put Toronto on the back heel. Greg Vanney, I think yesterday, took a not really a shot at Columbus, but said, you know, we've got an easier go of it because our players are fresh and, you know, the pressure's not on us, but the pressure's on Seattle. I actually think it's quite the opposite, and the pressure is not on Seattle at all. They seem to be playing a free-flowing but very tactically minded game. Brian Schmetzer is just as much of a tactician, and being able to see ahead and predict what a team is going to do as Greg Vanney is. I think it's going to be a great game and battle between two great tacticians, but I think Seattle just has a little bit too much on them in this one. And I know that Toronto really, really, really wants this, but the thing that I haven't seen a lot of people talk about yet is, does that also not open them up to mistakes? That there's that much pressure to win it, and they do deserve it so much. But that can bite teams. That doesn't always mean the perfect sports story happens. You can have just as easily a defending champion that's also, as you said, kept their core group of players come in and do it for a second time. They're also very, very good defensively. And as we've seen with Toronto throughout the series, they've struggled to produce much against teams that are that defensive.
Let me start talking myself into Toronto.
Okay.
Now that you
may proceed to talk yourself into the Toronto win.
I think that what has blown me away the most about this year that they've had getting back to the final is what pure sporting spite it is. We've talked before about the fact that neither of these teams were dominant. They were both I believe they were both in the knockout rounds to start the playoffs last year. This time last year, Toronto had somehow, in a way that nobody had fully been able to understand, beaten New York City 7-0 on aggregate.
Mm-hmm.
And then had a barn burner of a series against Montreal, but Montreal was not considered itself a contender or among the league's best.
Mm-hmm.
It's not as though Toronto had been particularly dominant. And Toronto took this loss and used it to turn themselves into a dominant league-leading team that that propelled them to the best season ever. And that is not necessarily what happens to teams that end up on the losing side of a championship final.
Totally.
It's far more common to see a championship hangover, to see teams try to put together the same kind of game that, that got them to the dance the first time, but not be able to exercise the same amount of mental focus. It's remarkable to me that the kind of season they put together, both on their own merits. It's not like any of them are bad players. Like with great coaching, with great play, but also just this incredible desire to right a wrong.
Yeah.
And to also say that it's not, they're not mad. It's actually quite funny to them. Mm. just like, you know, we're not, you know, the first game they played, or the only game that they played against Seattle in the regular season, they're like, oh, it's not revenge. We're not looking for revenge. I believe they did win that game. Or it was a 1-1 draw. And it wasn't out of control, but it was tense. And you could tell that they are saying, oh, we're not out for revenge. We're not out to try and, you know, prove anything. But they did set out this season to prove that they were the best. Seattle were in a position in that game where few people, I will maintain, having been at last year's MLS Cup, that in the stands, until you got the score sheet, it did not look like Seattle had zero shots on goal. But yeah, it was a tight game where not a lot was going forward from Seattle's end. And few people would look at the stat sheet and say that they didn't luck themselves into it a little bit. And so much went strangely that night.
Yeah.
Michael Bradley's penalty miss.
Mm-hmm.
So much was atypical about that game that it's been a remarkable act of spite from Toronto. And, you know, it's not necessarily wrong to say from Seattle.
Yeah.
To say that what happened in that game is not reflective of us.
Yeah, I agree with everything you've said, but I think that last point is really important as well, and that's why I think Seattle will win, is because I feel like neither team was themselves, as you said, yes. And I think that Seattle is a little bit more easily written off sometimes because they do have games where things just don't seem to really happen for them, and they have a decent amount of possession, but not a lot of great chances, or things just don't seem to fall for Dempsey or for Bruin or for Morris or Lodeiro. Like, all those players have had games where they've been non-starters. That being said, I think that the Seattle we saw last year really did kind of have something to prove to get themselves into that final in the first place and turn things around, because it's so easy to forget where they were a couple of months before the playoffs. But then you take that and that willingness and desire, and certainly a little bit of luck, and then you add a coach who's been with the club for a long time but has something to prove himself, and that's your consistent through line. Seattle's also added some important pieces and retained their core. You know, and who knows? In the end, I hope it's an entertaining game of soccer. Part of me hopes it goes to penalties. I don't think it will. I think we're going to see some goals here. I still feel like unless Greg Vanney totally switches it up, which I wouldn't put it past him to do, this cautious approach that they've been playing with to get to the final, I'm not sure is going to serve them that well. Yes, you certainly want to contain Seattle as much as you can. But as we saw even with Columbus, at a certain point you have to concede a little bit of possession in order to generate a counterattack, which is something that I feel like people don't actually give Toronto enough credit for. As much credit as they get for scoring goals and attacking, I think sometimes people forget how much of that can be done on the counter, because all we're talking about is Altidore's one-off plays and Giovinco's thunderous free kicks. But that does leave them open at the back, and I don't think anybody on the Toronto side wants to see this one go to even extra time, let alone penalties. I don't think Seattle will be too fussed by that prospect. I think, you know, they know in Fry they've got one of the best goalkeepers in the league who won't be troubled by a penalty shootout situation, and they also have players that can sink the ball in the back of the net. And how much all this stuff plays into the actual players' heads and the coaches' heads, I don't know. But in Bono, you have a relatively sort of goal kick or penalty kick untested keeper.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that they've struggled with penalties this season. I mean, most recently against Columbus, but that gets in players' heads. And you know who the people are going to be that are going to be stepping up to take those penalties. We'll see if they get there. I agree with everything you're saying. And maybe I don't even have a very good reason. I just feel like that's why I was careful to add Toronto deserves this like no other team. I think Seattle also deserves it, but I think Seattle is actually the better team, and I think they will find a way to win this game.
I think that this is it's you can focus on TFC all you want and then end up shocked, as people I think were, especially in the Canadian media markets, were last year, because you know people always yearn for the Canadian team to win in Canada.
Yeah.
I think the caveat, and the caveat I wanted to offer when I was making my prediction off the top,
mm-hmm.
is the Greg Vanney game plan.
Mm-hmm.
This cautious approach that is being used currently is, as I think it was last year, an approach that leads to 0-0 in penalties.
Yeah.
I think that... you know, if they're trying to cancel each other out, they can. We've all seen it. We've all watched them do it.
Yeah.
And
we just watched Toronto do it in the first leg against Columbus.
That being said, they've had a whole year to prepare for this exact moment. When we started this podcast, we basically said this was going to happen.
Yeah.
Like, it already seemed like it was in motion in the summer, and you can't think that they, through the acquisition of Vasquez, through preparation, through the whole year, that they haven't been thinking and dreaming and plotting and planning to get back to this game.
Mm-hmm.
So the caveat is, if there's something that we haven't seen yet, or something we would not expect from Toronto in this game, like all of a sudden they're just super open and attacking and they score three in the first half.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if they're able to use this spite and this dream that they have of redeeming themselves, to put something truly special out there, they will win. I wouldn't say that we saw that in the conference finals. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say that we saw that in the conference semifinals. We saw it in many occasions during the regular season.
Yeah.
but it really comes down to what we see at the time.
Well, and the question mark over Altidore, I guess. And I don't, you know, whether Altidore plays and goes down injured, or Altidore plays a full 90 minutes, or he doesn't play at all, we don't know what Giovinco we're going to see on the day, so that's also another part of it. Mm-hmm. That will make a difference for sure, the Altidore equation, if you want to call it that. The other piece I'm going to throw out here, and, you know, I don't have any stats to back it up, but it's just sort of a feeling, is that Seattle also does a little bit more to cultivate its younger players, and they've seen, I think, more playing time than Toronto's young players this season. Mm-hmm. And I think in a final, especially if you potentially have some players who might be out through injury, those are players that you want to be able to put in who are fresh and who have had some really crucial game minutes, because they're going to be playing against a massively good and focused Seattle side. Mm-hmm. I think Seattle has done a good job of finding a balance between their younger players and their veteran players, and younger players who have had to step in for those veteran players that we haven't really seen from Toronto. And yes, we know that they've got Ricketts, who can come in and he's got the speed and could provide a very tasty offensive threat against Seattle. But I feel like Seattle has a few more cards up its sleeve than this time last year. Toronto does certainly as well in Vasquez. We'll see.
If you wanted to unfairly compare Jonathan Osorio and Raheem Edwards to Will Bruin and Jordan Morris,
yeah,
I think you would have to take the latter pair.
Yeah, and the interesting thing is both teams are so similar, right? Like they've got great goalkeepers, they've got great defensive mids, they've got great creative center mids, they've got a slew of great strikers, young and old. I certainly am not willing to compare those four players with each other. But as much as people are talking about Altidore and Giovinco and Vasquez and maybe even Ricketts, I think that a good player, a consistently good player, and a player who's a little bit flies under the radar in Will Bruin, he's on a roll. And I think he takes a lot of pride in whatever club he plays for, but I think nothing would silence his critics more than a game-winning goal in MLS Cup. And I absolutely think that he can beat the Toronto defense, and I think he'll be looking to get his chance, and Brian Schmetzer's going to say as much to him before the match and really challenge him. He also has brought something different to his game. I wouldn't say it's new, but if he is that alive, focused, and contributing as he's been in this series, he brings, yet again, something different to Toronto in that it hasn't quite fallen for Vasquez and Giovinco as of late in their creative build-up play. And they've had to be playing very deep out of the back. And if Seattle can keep that kind of understanding with Will Bruin and Dempsey, and adding Jordan Morris to the equation, maybe getting Lodero a little further up the pitch, I don't think we're going to see zero shots on net.
I'm really looking forward to it, regardless of whether or not I can get into the stadium. last year's MLS Cup was one of my, among the greatest sports memories in sports events that I've witnessed live. I mean, there's not a lot.
Yeah.
Not a lot there. This is my only pro sports championship final.
Yeah. One thing we can say for sure.
It's a special event.
It is. The sure thing about this match is it is a great matchup. Mm-hmm. Hopefully that results in a great game, regardless of who wins. I think it's... Yeah, it's a great matchup. It's a great story for MLS. I just hope that it's not Seattle and Toronto next year.
We've had about as much as we could take, I think.
Yeah, let somebody else have a crack at it. They should be banned.
I got some news. Would you like some news?
Yeah, let's have a little bit of news. A lot of clubs did roster updates, but I think maybe let's save that till the off season so we have something to talk about. But give me some news.
So in addition to Greg Vanney winning Coach of the Year, which I don't think was out by the time we were talking last, we talked about that a little bit. Diego Valeri of the Portland Timbers has won the 2017 Landon Donovan MLS MVP in a landslide, as many people have been eager to tell you.
Yes.
50.71% of the vote.
And who are the other contenders, just to contextualize?
The next biggest with 60% was David Villa. And then with 7.8%, Nemanja Nikolic. With 6%, Sebastian Giovinco, and then with change, Almiron, Bradley, Martinez, and Vasquez.
Huh. Interesting.
The spike. Bradley got 0.0% of the vote from players, but 9.52% from clubs. So I was trying to, like, reverse engineer that percentage to find out how many clubs voted for Bradley, but I don't know that it works exactly.
With the MVP, I get it. That's, I think it's well-deserved from Valeri. I mean, it's hard to argue with the season he's had. I'm a little bit surprised Nikolic finished so low. However, I think it's easier to give an MVP to a player, to a midfielder, who doesn't just score goals, but also has that many assists as well, which we've certainly seen. So, well done, Valeri.
I suppose they did. They got... It's always weird. MVP voting should always count the regular season and only the regular season, and they do like to announce it before the championship as to add to their key... their key promotion in an important moment. It's always weird when the MVP isn't anywhere near the championship game.
It is a bit. I mean, and with the case of Diego Valeri, I think it's fair. I mean, it's hard to argue a player that's had a better year on paper, and even just from the way that he's played and the leadership that he's provided. Yeah, I agree. It's a bit funny when you're giving out awards to all these players who have long since packed up, headed home. They're on the beaches of Ibiza. They're, you know, possibly on their way out to a different club. And just now we're like, oh, yes, they were pretty good.
It's a little bit of U.S. news, which we're not as... we don't care about as much generally. But Sunil Gulati will not run for another term as U.S. soccer president, which does have impacts on MLS.
Mm-hmm.
Although he will, generally, he's probably going to continue to have his FIFA seat. He's going to probably continue to be the head of the joint USA-Mexico-Canada World Cup bid.
Mm.
A lot of blame fell at his feet, and part of that had been for the setup of the league system. And he will not be content. But at the same time, it looked as though maybe that wasn't really going to have an impact on whether or not he continued in the role. But he will not be returning.
I think there'll be a couple of people okay with that.
The last thing that I had, it was a while ago now, but expansion is down to 4 bids.
Right, yes.
We're now for 2 expansion slots. We now have Cincinnati, Detroit, Nashville, and Sacramento as your final candidates. Are you on the Cincinnati? Are you still on the Cincinnati train? You think this is good news? Good news for them?
I really think it is. I think they've proven that they've got a great draw. It seems like that. they've built up a base that's there. And they seem to me similar to Atlanta, where they kind of did the work beforehand. They didn't get the MLS bid and then try to build the club and get the stadium and do all those other things. I believe they've secured a stadium thing, if I'm not mistaken. The city seems like they're behind them. They had a great run this year in the U.S. Open Cup. Yeah, I think they're a great club. They've done everything right as an organization to set themselves up for a successful MLS bid. And I think I'm really hoping gone are the days of the big, flashy, incoming expansion side that then proceeds to do absolutely nothing and really falter and struggle to find an identity. We saw this year with Atlanta that change. I think even Minnesota, despite not having a great start to the season and not, maybe not a great finish, certainly a club with an identity helped. And Cincinnati has the identity. I feel like it should be a pretty much done deal for them. The others, I have no idea. Detroit blows my mind. Like, where the key business indicators are for a Detroit team, I'm not quite sure, but they got to be somewhere, I guess.
That would be the money in the pockets of the owners, Dan Gilbert, who owns the Cleveland Cavaliers, and Quicken Loans, and Tom Gorse, who owns the Detroit Pistons and Platinum Equity. So that's where I would see the strength.
You sound so cynical Detroit when you make it sound all about money.
Well, those are pretty money in the pocket is a key business indicator. as you were suggesting, Sacramento. One key indicator is that of the four, Sacramento is the only team on the West Coast. Do you think that will matter? Do you think that MLS could just decide to put these two teams on the East Coast, or do you think that that pretty much seals Sacramento's place, being that they're the only candidates on that end?
In MLS thinking, if Anchorage had a team, they would find a way to put them in the Eastern Conference if they had to. So I don't think it's going to trouble them, the head office too much about where they go in the conference. I mean, it's a screwy conference system already. There's two such large countries. I mean, there's got to be a dividing line somewhere. But no, I don't think it'll be too big of a decision for them, to be honest.
All right, we will see more. The presentations will be made on December 6th. There will be a meeting on December 14th with more discussion. And then one would imagine that we're going to start hearing something later in the month.
Wow, I didn't know it was even going to be that soon. So MLS will look yet different again when we start looking at the preseason camps in January, or in February, rather.
And we've got LA 2 coming as well.
Oh, God. Why?
So much happening. Well, I mean, those teams, I don't know when exactly.
LAFC is not till 2019, I believe. Is that true? No.
No, they're next year.
They're next year. They only have two players. Do they know that? Do they know they only have two players? They probably know that.
I think the Las Vegas Lights have more players. I could be wrong.
I think you're right. They have Carlos Vela, and then I think they just signed a Peruvian guy, perhaps? I could have that wrong, but I don't know. Very hard to get excited about LAFC. Although interesting that Will Ferrell is now amongst the ownership group in MLS. So,
Can I ring you out before we take off here? I ring out of you a numerical prediction for the MLS Cup?
I told you.
Well, you said like 2-1, 1-0. Okay. I'm gonna ask you to nail down an actual score.
Oh, you want me to not just give several possible outcomes?
Yes.
Okay. I think. Now I've talked myself into really wanting it to go to penalties again. With Roman Torres scoring the final goal again. You know what? I'm going to say 2-1. I think Toronto scores. I think I think Seattle wins this one 2-1. I'm not very certain about this prediction anymore. Whatever. I've been wrong before. I'm sure I'll be wrong again, but I think it's going to be a 2-1 win for Seattle.
There are so many ways to call this one, but because you didn't call penalties, I will.
Okay.
0-0 Toronto wins on penalties.
All right. Fair.
That would be the most perfect, the neatest, tightest, prettiest bow on this two-year period in MLS, I think.
Now, the best outcome possible in this scenario is it goes to penalties. Both teams miss, like, three of the penalties, so it goes to second round of penalties. And then Jonathan DeZorio scores the game-winning goal. Or Betashore.
Yes.
Or Stephen Betashore, but...
We love Betashore is great, of course.
Betashore is great, but Jonathan DeZorio would... How amazing would it be after all of that if, like, Vasquez, Giovinco, Altidore all miss their penalty and DeZorio just steps up and sides foots it past Stefan Fry? That would be a great finish.
One more prediction before we leave. Is Michael Bradley scoring a penalty?
You know what? I don't think so. It's plain and simple. I think he'll get it on frame. I think Stefan Fry will save it if it comes to that.
I will stick with my prediction and say that he will do it. And okay. That will be the tightest. It will come down. The entire game will play exactly the same up to that moment.
Am I crazy? Did Stefan Fry take a penalty last time? I thought there was a goalkeeper that took a penalty.
It's not impossible. Where can we find you online?
You can find me online at That's So MLS. I will be live, quote unquote, tweeting the game. So if you want to get in my ear about something, I'll be doing that. Where can we find you?
You can find me at Team Bates, www.team-bates.com. www.whatahowler.com. I will be in Toronto for the weekend of the MLS Cup Final. If you can hear my voice and you've got a ticket that you would like to sell me for money, tickets for Bates. Come on. I would appreciate it.
You know what I should do is I should just call you and record a segment and just see where you're at. If you're like, you know, okay, all right, I'm in this guy's car. We're headed down Bloor Street. He says he knows a guy. I don't know. I'm in a very dark apartment now. Oh, God, there's blood. There's blood. Okay, I've got the ticket. I'm running back to the station.
As long as the ticket he's had.
There you go, everybody.
Until next time, conduct your internet transactions responsibly and don't get sent off.
Indeed. Don't put the player's face into the ground if you can avoid it.
Ha 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 ha.